Know the Source on One Radio Network.
Morning. Hi there. It's September 25, 2018. OneRadioNetwork.com. This is Patrick Timpone, broadcasting live from our palatial studios, high above my kitchen, our bedroom, in Dripping Springs, Texas. Have a nice view. Lots and lots and lots of trees all over the place, and little hills and valleys. And Dripping Springs is what they call the gateway to the hill country. Texas is pretty flat from East Texas all the way over Houston. If you can picture that, Louisiana, Houston. Pretty flat, a lot of pine trees. Comes up to Austin, goes through the airport, comes to Austin, and just west of Austin, it begins to get hilly. Just west, even in the neighborhoods, and then it goes... starts the hill country, and we're right here about 45 minutes from Austin, and lots of hills out here. And then if you travel west, Fredericksburg, and out towards Johnson City, where LBJ used to hang out, ex-president, lots of hills and stuff like that. It's called the Texas Hill Country. So I just give you a little topography so you can see where you are. And our guest on the last Tuesday of the month is Dr. Jennifer Daniels, and she, for a little topography, she is high up on a hill, way up in a big mountain kind of thing, in Panama. Panama, near the Panama Canal. And she walks up and down the hill to get her groceries and look for boys and stuff, and in great shape. And Dr. Daniels, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you? You said it's a beautiful day there when I first connected with you, huh?
Gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
The sun is shining. The clouds are just creeping over the highest volcano in Panama. And it's wonderful.
Yeah. Your little volcano, is it stable, or does it smoke out from time to time?
It never smokes out. Mm-hmm. But there are all these fear mongers telling us it could explode at any minute.
Oh, yes. At any time.
Right. Yeah, last time it exploded was more than 100 years ago, so I'm gonna bet I got another 100 years.
Probably so. So there's people out there, they say, watch out, the volcano's ready to go and all that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like Yellowstone. They do that here with Yellowstone. Oh, the ground is swelling, the deer are leaving, and then, you know, they've been saying that for 25 years.
Correct.
It's funny. I guess there's no new viruses that they're pitching for fall yet. Maybe, probably early, right?
Well, you know, it is about time. Usually in October, they start getting
right.
going with that.
That's right.
That's right. Just in case anybody wants to know, when you try and grow a virus on egg protein, it creates tons of mutations, so the resultant vaccine cannot possibly ever be effective against the virus that you grew on the egg culture.
That's real science.
And all virus vaccines are grown on egg culture.
Uh-huh.
So it is just, as I observed during my 10 years of medical practice, that the flu vaccine was not effective in any single year.
It just didn't work.
No. Well, there's a couple of reasons why it didn't work. First reason, of course, is the antibodies were never made against the virus that was being grown. That's number one. Number two, there is no such thing as immunity. So, since there's no such thing as immunity, it cannot be conferred by a vaccine or by a sorcerer's spell or by any other means.
No such thing as immunity, meaning the whole model doesn't make someone immune from this or that, the vaccine model?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. So, in other words, if you have an infection once, let's say, mm-hmm. your body recognizes it, your body makes antibodies, that's nice. But you can still succumb to that infection if your immune system is weak. So if you're dehydrated, if you don't have enough sleep, if you're malnourished, even though your body successfully fended off this infection maybe 6 weeks, 6 months, or 6 years ago, you will still succumb. And this is why people who are under the age of 5 and over the age of 65 tend to die from or succumb to infectious problems or issues just because they have a weak immune system. So immunity, in other words, prior exposure to that particular organism, is irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. So same thing for the young kids, Doc, of why their immunity wouldn't be strong, just poor food and water or whatever?
That, but also why the vaccines, every last one of them, is totally ineffective.
Right.
Even if you dig deep into the literature published by the government itself, so you read the literature published by the government about the tetanus vaccine. I mean, who doesn't believe in tetanus shots, right? The government will say that the decline in tetanus is because people are no longer exposed to it.
Okay.
In other words, if you're not exposed to the infectious organism, of course you're not going to get it. And so the tetanus shot is totally ineffective when you compare the frequency of infection in those who are exposed. Whether they're vaccinated or not, there's no difference.
Mm-hmm. When you were in New York practicing, what was your whole thing with vaccines, and how has it changed a lot since then?
When you said, what was my whole thing with vaccines?
In other words, your whole approach and what you knew and thought about it, and what your patients thought about, has that changed a lot since then? The whole, your whole vision of it and your whole understanding of it?
So I refused to give vaccines in my office. So that was that.
I'm losing you again. I'm losing the volume again. Losing you.
Ooh. I told people that if they wanted vaccines, they could get them, but not at my office.
I see.
And so that was that. And that posture has not changed, but the motivation behind it has. So when I was in medical practice, when I first started, I didn't have the track record of observing unvaccinated people. But all I knew was what they were paying me to give a vaccine did not cover my costs. So that was that. I wasn't going to give vaccines. So I did not give vaccines in my office, I think, after the first year. The first year I did give vaccines, but after that, no. And my office, over a period of 10 years, I noticed that the unvaccinated kids were phenomenally healthier. They didn't get ear infections. They didn't get respiratory illnesses. They were simply healthier. And so that also, so by the time I left practice, I was totally against vaccines just because I saw that they didn't work.
Let's go back on the flu. So every fall, as we know, they'll start coming out saying, well, the flu's this and this, and get your flu shots.
Right.
In your opinion, is there actual flu viruses like running around the air that come up and get stronger or more in the fall?
No,
or is
no.
the whole thing just no. a big, silly?
It's a big obedience test.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say get your flu shot, the people who want a flu shot are obedient. So it's a big obedience test.
Wow. Sure feels like that, doesn't it?
I think that's exactly what it is. That's all it is. Hmm. It's an obedience test, and then if you look at the results in vaccinations in nursing homes, assisted living centers, it's an extermination program for the people over 65. In other words, people who get the flu shots who are over 65 have a dramatically increased death rate, as much as a 10% death rate, you know, when they get the flu shot. And no one has been prosecuted for this. It's not been investigated, nothing. And what people need to understand is there's something called the standard of care. And the standard of care is a protocol, a recipe, a way of doing things, and anyone who follows that is immune from prosecution of any kind, even if the actions result in the death of the individual. And this is why people who administer flu shots, even though the recipients may die, the person administering the shot or the institution administering the shot is not in any way held liable. So people need to understand that the concept of, say, malpractice actually creates an incentive to kill people. Because what malpractice says is as long as you follow the standard of care, you cannot be prosecuted. And so what happens now, if even though the doctor or health practitioner may have done something, even though the something they did may have caused harm, let's call it death, they are not legally culpable or blamed because they followed the standard of care.
Is that immunity for the doctors?
For everybody.
Right. I mean, as long as they do the standard of care, they're covered. Is there other provisions as far as protecting docs from giving vaccines other than that provision? Do they have two separate?
Yes, they have double coverage.
Double coverage. So there's a blanket thing about immunity that's been passed somewhere in the government?
FDA? Yes, so it's called the standard of care. And then there's another blanket immunity, particularly for vaccines. And so what people need to realize is when it comes to safety in medicine, you're on your own. There, you have no protection. The right to sue is actually reverse protection. For example, in other countries, like Panama and there are other countries as well, if you go to a doctor and you are harmed, that doctor is prosecuted for assault.
Really?
Assault, and if you die, he is prosecuted for homicide. And in Panama, we actually have doctors in jail serving time because their patients died as a result of what they did. So in Panama, the standard of care does not protect you.
What if somebody goes to the doc, gets a statin or something, and it's proved that that statin really messed up the person and they died? So that doc and pharmaceutical company still covered because of the standard of care?
No. That standard of care is only in the United States.
That's what I was talking
hard.
About.
Yeah, only in the United States. But that same thing happening in Panama, that doctor would go to jail for homicide.
That'd be darn.
Oh. And he would serve a jail term just like any common criminal who walked up to you and shot you with a gun.
No, really. It's like that in other places around Europe, too.
I'm not sure which other countries have that, but the drug companies are working very hard in Panama, or they were 10 years ago, to get that change and to institute a policy of malpractice protecting the doctors from the consequences of their action as long as they follow the direction of the drug companies. And don't make any mistake about it. The drug companies are writing the standard of care.
More and more, we hear more tales about how moms are keeping their kids indoors early because they don't want people to come over unless they've been vaccinated. I hear stories about that. Oh, you can't come over, you know. And so what do you suppose this does to the child's health? Is this helping the child?
Which child?
The child that is being protected in the home without...
Oh, no, because he's been vaccinated. He's been harmed already.
Right. And then grandma and grandpa have been vaccinated, too, or they can't see him.
Correct. And so now grandma and grandpa are going to die prematurely because, right, they're over 65. Their immune systems are compromised. And so they're more likely to succumb to the vaccines.
What is this herd immunity the vaccinated proponents talk about?
That's an excuse for vaccines not working. So the question always comes up, well, I vaccinated my kid. How come he's still getting sick? Oh, well, it's because the other 75 kids didn't get vaccinated. Oh, okay, it's their fault. Okay, well, I'm going to go call up their mothers and beat up on them. So the vaccines don't work. And so when they don't work, you got to make up reasons why they don't work. So when I was in medical school, herd immunity meant 75% of people needed to be vaccinated. And then those 75% formed a cluster around the freeloaders who were unvaccinated. And so they said that when the vaccine rate was down around 30%, right? So, well, we need herd immunity, 75%. So now it's up to like 90%, 99%. And so what's happening now is they're having outbreaks in communities where the immunization rate is 99%. So now they have to come up with another theory to explain that.
How do they? Oh, they haven't come up with an answer for that yet. They're going to come up with another word.
Well, the answer for that is what this lady is saying is, my school has a 99% vaccine rate, but I'm not going to allow an unvaccinated child to come into my home. Because a kid walks into your home, right, you have a 50% vaccine rate now. You're one kid plus the unvaccinated. It's only 50% vaccine rate, not enough to protect the herd of two people.
Yeah.
So, of course, it begs the question, well, wait a minute. Aren't you getting vaccinated because the vaccine protects you against the virus when you encounter it? So then how can your immunity be dependent upon what someone else does if the vaccine is truly effective? Hmm. And of course, people are trained not to think. And so this, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. Now, the other thing you can think logically, let me say I'm a mother. Okay, I'm vaccinating my kid. Got that. In order for the vaccine to work, I have to get every other woman in my neighborhood to vaccinate her kids. Well, I have no control over those ladies, right? So that means my vaccine's not going to work. So why should I bother to get it? I mean, there's logical thinking right there.
Mm-hmm. What if there was a vaccine for this or that, and there was no adjuvants, just a kind of a one hunk of measles or mumps?
There's no such thing as a vaccine without adjuvants.
I know, but I'm just hypothesizing here. What if there were? Would that do anything?
No, because there's no such thing as immunity.
Okay, it doesn't encourage the body to make antibodies for the measles if it was just a pure measle hit?
It does, but that does not keep you from getting the measles.
Doesn't just keep you. Okay. It maybe give you more antibodies, but just depends on your whole immunity system.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's like me painting a red stripe across my forehead. And okay, now I'm immune against measles or something. Mm-hmm. So since immunity does not exist, it's fictitious. That's like me saying I'm having Santa Claus over for dinner. Now, you know, maybe someone in a Santa Claus suit might show up, but you know there is no Santa Claus, right? Mm-hmm. Are we together on that?
No, okay. I'm with you there, girl.
Immunity is the same thing. It's like Santa Claus.
Just doesn't exist.
You can get all the shots you want. Santa Claus is not coming down your chimney. Because Santa Claus does not exist. A human being dressed in a Santa Claus suit might show up. But Santa Claus, that guy who made toys for people thousands of years ago or hundreds of years ago, does not exist. He's not here. Ain't showing up. So you can do whatever you want. You can stand on your head. You can get 2,000 vaccines. You're not going to be immune to anything because immunity does not exist.
Hmm. And what do these adjuvants do to the body?
Nothing good.
Yeah. Nothing good at all. They mess with the whole immune system itself, the natural one?
Well, the point is that these adjuvants are poisons. Hmm. So many of the adjuvants, for example, they're poisons put in the vaccine to prevent mold from growing. They're poisons put in the vaccine to keep the multiple dose vials from infecting the next kid with staph or another contaminant. So they have adjuvants in the vaccine that are put in there to poison and weaken the virus. They call it attenuated. So there's a lot of poisons put in the vaccine to make it a, well, vaccine. And these poisons is what the person gets because there is no immunity. So it's simply a ritualistic tribal gesture of submission when you vaccinate your child. That's what you're doing. This is a gesture, a ritualistic cultural gesture of submission. No more scientific, if you want to call it that, than the cavemen who would take a razor blade and slice a streak on your cheek to let you know you were in that tribe.
Dr. Jennifer Daniels is with us on the last Tuesday of the month. If you have a question, 888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. She doesn't give medical advice. She just gives opinions about her ideas and whatever. And she'll give you some of our ideas about things. So before we go, and we'll take a little break and take some emails. So are the adjuvants, do they play a role in stimulating the body somehow to make them work more? Or are they purely for mold?
You got to understand, it does not work, okay? We're talking about Santa Claus.
No, here. I understand.
Yeah, but so they're not going to make, Santa Claus will not show up no matter what.
No matter what. I see. So.
Right.
But is it doing something to the immune system other than just preserving
it? Damaging it?
Yeah.
No, it's damaging it.
It's damaging it.
It's burdening the immune system by adding poisons. And so now the immune system is burdened with dealing with these poisons, and should an infection show up, the immune system is preoccupied and can't deal with it. And that's why the vaccinated kids are sicker.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Messing with Mother Nature. Okay. Dr. Jennifer Daniels, Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. Come on in and please join us. You've heard us talk about Shaga and Rishi. There's a sale going on now with Shaga and Rishi, and it's pretty cool. And you don't need a, you don't need anything. You don't need a the promo code or anything like that. All you have to do is click on there, and Shagun Rishi, they have on sale now at Sir Thrival and for the next couple of weeks. So think about that if you'd like to get some of that. It's a great, great product, and all the fruited bodies and Myron glass. It's really, really pretty cool. The far infrared sauna is on sale all the time around here. They allow us to sell for $995. And if you don't know what this one's about, you can click on the front page and look at a picture of it, and you'll see what the Relax far infrared sauna looks like. And it's really a nice little unit. And you set it up in probably about 10 minutes or so, believe it or not. It has this kind of space-age silver material, but it is actual colloidal silver there in the material, so it helps the bacterial stuff. And then you just wipe it down and put a towel over the chair. And it's very nice. It gets quite warm. Put a timer on there in case you fall asleep. Your head is out so you don't burn your brain, get a real hot head. And you'll get some nice detoxing modes through the far infrared light and also through the actual sweating itself. So you got a two thing there. And you can do it every day, probably the rest of your life, and you're going to be a happy girl. Just to make sure, boy, make sure you get plenty of water, getting your little electrolytes. You can just use some good sea salts or electrolytes, or, you know, make sure you're getting plenty of minerals because you sweat a lot of stuff out. But we know that a lot of the goobies, and that's a medical term, goobies do get stored in the fat, and they'll come out. And then I think that as the fat gets cleaner and cleaner, it'll also draw out the minerals or heavy metals out of the bones. Dr. Huggins talked about that. And Dr. Sherry Rogers as well, who wrote a whole book on detox. So that's pretty cool too, how you can continue to get cleaner and cleaner. Because a lot of this mercury and stuff like that do get stored in the bone. Our guest yesterday said they'll even go into the jawbone and kind of hang out there for a while. So the Relax Far Infrared Sauna, if you care to look at one, you can see all the information. You click on the sauna page, but don't order there. It's $11.95, as you'll see. Just email me and we'll shoot it out to you at $9.95. Tax title license delivered, 48 states. Outside the 48, email me and we'll work it out and we'll ship it to you. Well, Wayne Blakely, if we believe, as we're told, that like 80% of the immune system is in the gut, is that true?
At least,
okay. So if you're doing probies with things, I mean, wouldn't it stand to reason that there could be things going on in the immune system that we have no idea?
Oh, yeah.
Right. I mean, no idea.
Absolutely.
No idea, right?
No idea.
So anything, you know.
Well, a lot of it is they call it peptides, and, you know, these guys make up a lot of words. It's chemical reaction goes on in your gut. It's all chemical. Enzymes, a molecule that's being formed, is a certain kind of molecule. And in the body, the bacteria take those molecules, like food molecules that come down the upper tract, down into the lower tract, the small intestine tract, is converted from a food molecule to an amino acid. And then it's created a food molecule, and then when it gets to the lower tract, it's converted to an amino acid, changes it. But it has to have all the chemicals, and it has to have all the minerals down there to do the conversion.
And as Dr. Richard Olry has taught us, then we need the probiotics and the good bacteria to make the minerals, and the knee bone is connected to you know what I'm saying. These are really, really nice products, about 14 different ones to choose from. Living Streams Probiotics, all in our store, oneradionetwork.com.
Gold was first discovered more than 3,000 years ago and has been a store of value for thousands of years. It was used in the United States from the 1790s through the 1930s to mint our money. Today, original examples of these American coins are sought after by both investors and collectors. We are U.S. Gold Coins. Call us today to learn more about how you can acquire physical, early American gold and silver coins. Call us at 1-800-468-2646. USGoldCoins.com.
Andy's going to be here tomorrow, every Wednesday, and let's see if we can tell you what gold and silver is, just for fun, to keep you updated. In case you're going to go out and buy some gold today, don't put it in your mouth or anything. But gold is $1,202, silver is $1,458, and the dollar is stronger than ever, 94 on the USD, and crude oil is about $72. So there you have it, from Andy Goss's company, usgoldcoins.com.
Broadcasting live, weekday morning, this is listener-supported One Radio Network.
Okay, Dr. Jennifer Daniels is here, and her website is vitalitycapsules.com. And so other than your Candida Cleaner report thing, that's a free ebook, you have other books there too, right? You have cookbooks and stuff? Tell folks what you have.
Yeah, I have cookbooks so people can learn how to cook healing recipes.
Ah.
And they're very simple recipes. They're all kid-tested as well.
Hmm.
And only recipes that got double thumbs up made it into the book.
Hmm.
Also, I have a home study course. Also coming up, this Saturday is a sale on Vitality Capsules.
Okay.
And
all right.
The only way to find out about the sale is to go to vitalitycapsules.com, get your free report, which puts you on the mailing list, and then we send you emails about the sale.
Freebie sale. Oh, not freebie, but sale. That's good. That's good.
Yeah, sale. It's a very big sale, deep discount. And so a lot of people have been on the fence about buying Vitality Capsules. This is their chance to get Vitality Capsules at a pretty deep discount.
Well, give yourself a little plug, because you developed this product. We have new listeners all the time, Dr. Daniels. Well, how does this product work, and why would you want to get Vitality Capsules other than having vitality?
So when I was in medical practice in the 90s and started using natural healing, I realized I could not get people better because they were not pooping and having bowel movements. And so people said to me, Dr. Daniels, if you make a product and it's a pill I can just take and it'll make me poop, I'll take it and I'll poop. And so what I did was I started working with these herbs, and I found this amazing combination that clears the bile ducts, clears the small intestine, and clears the large intestine, and also stimulates the circulation so more trash is brought to the liver. And so a lot of cleansing products, they fall down because they clear only the colon and not the small intestine. Or they'll clear the small intestine, but they don't clear the liver. Or maybe they'll clear that whole tract, but they don't stimulate circulation to bring more waste to the liver from all around the body. And so this is why people experience a feeling of increased energy and well-being, because their body is literally unclogged.
We've heard that. I suspect most folks running around planet Earth are classically or technically constipated.
Correct. They're technically constipated.
Yeah, like,
so if you're classically constipated, that means you are missing days of having bowel movements. If you're technically constipated, it means you're pooping maybe once a day. So pooping once a day is enough to keep your health exactly where it is. So you have to actually increase that to 3 poops a day, and then your body says, oh, wait, this person is dumping more waste. Now I have space to clean up, space to put waste. Because if you can imagine trying to clean your own house and do spring cleaning, imagine all the trash cans are full. And somebody is helping you, and they're taking out one little trash can a day, one little trash can a day. That's just enough to keep your house as messy as it is. But let's say someone comes in and cleans out all the trash cans. You're like, oh, wow, now I can really clean up. And your body is the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I suspect over the years that culture in the United States worldwide is once a day is kind of like normal. Right? People just kind of believe that.
Well, it's gotten even worse than that, because now people have long commutes at work.
Yeah.
They have jobs where they can't take bathroom breaks, except maybe once every 4 hours. And so people have put a lot of constraints in their lives that enforce constipation as a survival tactic for them to keep their job and pay their bills.
Mm-hmm. And I suspect the body learns then how not to whatever do its thing as you kind of hold on to it, like we used to do when we were kids, right?
Right.
In school, yeah. Man, we would say, can I go to the bathroom? And the nuns would say, well, you can, yeah, recess time. Okay.
That's the big lesson of school is get you out of control of your life and your body.
Train
and
have your bowels. It's like, sure.
Yes. That actually is that's the big lesson. You only go when you get permission and when someone else says so, and you stay constipated. So that's a huge lesson in school.
And
it sets you up for the rest of your life.
I can recall, too, very clearly, even though it's been 60 years ago, that it almost like they had it to the point where you didn't even dare ask. It was almost like, you know, they shamed you. You know, it was like, oh.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Not good. Not good. Here's an email for you, Dr. Jennifer Daniels. I've been prescribed CoQ10 by my hypertrophic, for my hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. The medical grade CoQ10 that my doctor prescribed is helpful, but is very expensive, and was curious if Dr. Daniels has any opinion on CoQ10, and if there's any alternative, or if cheaper, or if the medical grade is different from what I can buy on Amazon.
Medical grade is no different from what you can buy on Amazon. All you need to do is pay attention to the milligrams, and that's it. Otherwise, they are identical.
Oh, so
in fact, the medical grade may have more additives and excipients and binders and colorings and all kinds of other crap in it.
Oh, so this is a doctor that's actually prescribing medical grade from his office. Is it a prescription?
No. So what's happened is the drug companies have moved into the natural space in a big way.
Oh, okay.
And so they're putting out the same supplements and often with more chemicals and more additives in them and calling it medical grade, catching the attention of this unfortunate gullible individual here.
Ah, okay. Does this stuff work? Is good for whatever this
now,
guy?
The other question is, he taking a cholesterol-lowering medication? If he is, first of all, your body makes coenzyme Q10, just for anyone's information who wants to know.
Mm-hmm.
And when you lower your cholesterol, you lower your body's ability to make coenzyme Q10. You wipe it out.
So
you're actually harming your heart when you lower your cholesterol. So what this guy really needs to do is stop taking his doctor's cholesterol-lowering advice. That's what he really needs to do.
Oh, so you're saying he's probably on statins and the doc has given him CoQ10 to whatever.
To help mitigate is really what's going on. Now, what he really needs to do is he needs to increase his cholesterol, production, and change his diet. Now, sure, take coenzyme Q10, but there's no reason he has to pay through the nose for it. He can just get it off Amazon, just get the same milligram.
Mm-hmm.
Just take the same total milligram per day.
As I recall, years ago, there was a story that they told docs when you prescribe statins, you have to prescribe CoQ10 with it. This was in Europe.
Right, but in the United States, they don't tell them
that.
What they found in Europe, and they found it in the United States too, is that people with statins are dying at a much higher rate, people who take statins. And so statins do not prolong your life. So if you look at statins and all-cause mortality from death, they are actually damaging.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way they get around it is, it reduces your heart attack rate. And then you dig deeper into that, it reduces your rate of a non-fatal heart attack. Well, who cares to avoid the non-deadly ones? It's no big deal. Most of them are silent anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So then the benefit from statins is much more imagined than real. Again, we're back to Santa Claus here and the Easter Bunny.
Here's an email. This is a good one. This is from Joyce. I'm 91 years old. I broke my hip some time ago, was in the hospital and rehab for that. During that time, I was put on oxygen that I'm still on at home. I am moving around, getting stronger, but I checked the two medications I am on, and they are beta blockers. And I would like to get doctor's opinion on what beta blockers do and also what I can do to help get off this oxygen.
Okay, so the reason you're on the oxygen is because you're fatigued, exhausted, have difficulty getting around, and your heart is weak, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
So the beta blockers make your heart weaker. In other words, your beta blocker is the reason that you're on the oxygen.
Come on, now hold on. So they gave her beta blockers in the hospital for what reason?
She didn't tell us.
Yeah, but what would you say? Why they were given to her? They must have had some weakness in heart that they saw.
No. There's lots of reasons. Lots of reasons to take a beta blocker. You can take it for elevated blood pressure. You can take it for a fast heartbeat. You can take it for supposedly congestive heart failure. How does taking a pill for a weak heart that makes your heart weaker, how's that helpful? Well, you have to talk to the researchers about that, right? So that's what's happened to her. So she's a victim of the medical industrial complex, to put it like bluntly.
What are the beta blockers doing? Do you know?
Yes. It makes the heart beat slower and weaker. So now you have a pump that's beating slower and weaker. You can put up, and so what that means is what would be enough oxygen in the blood is no longer enough, because now that blood that the lungs have filled with adequate oxygen is not being pumped to the body as quickly or with the same frequency. So in other words, before the beta blocker, maybe the heart was delivering 2 units of blood a minute, let's say. Mm-hmm. But with the beta blocker, now it's delivering only 1 unit, only 1 unit of blood per minute, hence 1 unit of oxygen, half as much oxygen. So literally her heart is delivering oxygen to her cells at reduced or less than, possibly even half the rate it was delivering oxygen before she was taking the beta blocker. So the beta blocker is why she needs the oxygen supplement. The beta blocker is why her cells are not getting enough oxygen and why she's so tired.
I know you can't do medical advice, but what do you think she... Go back. Well, I do. I want to get that disclaimer in. What would you do? Recommend she go back to the doc and say, I don't want to take these, or what?
Go back to the doctor. Are you kidding me? Or go to your executioner and say, slice off this arm, not that arm.
But
I want to take it in the heart, not the liver. I mean, you know, so.
But you know what I'm saying?
You know, let me just be clear.
Yeah, let me just be clear. The reason I'm asking is you can understand how somebody maybe 91 would say, "Oh, I'm cautious, doc, or I'm afraid to get off these because I don't know what they." You know what I'm saying? That's why
91. I mean, 91. Come on, grow some balls, right? You got to 91 without the doctor's help. You probably get a little further without it. You know what I mean? You just got to tell the doctor, "Hey, dude, come on, let's get real. You are not the reason I'm 91 years old."
There you go. That's good. I like that.
Yeah. You know, Yeah. So I think she needs to, you know, pray on this and, you know, see what God has to say about
it. Okay.
Now, if it was me, I can't tell her what she should do, but if it was me, I would definitely, you know, taper myself off these beta blockers and, I'd live dangerously. Or the point is, I'd live at all. But she's not going to, this beta blocker is not helping her live longer. Now, how she wants to stop it, That's up to her.
In general, the way that she'll get the oxygen levels off once she's off the beta blockers, is it just movement, moving around, walking? No.
You've not been listening. Let me repeat myself. So when she stops the beta blocker, her heart will beat faster and with more force, delivering the blood with the same oxygen concentration to her tissues at a faster rate.
No, I understand. I got that.
So in other words, if I'm carrying a 1 pound bucket of stuff, and I'm bringing it to you at the rate of one bucket an hour, then if I start bringing it to you at 5 buckets an hour, the same 1 pound, you're going to end up with 5 pounds of stuff. So her heart, oxygen, same way. What the beta blocker is doing is making her heart deliver less oxygen to her cells and at a lower rate. And then the doctor comes in and says, oh, let's put you on oxygen. So the doctor then says, okay, let's change your bucket from a 1 pound bucket to a 5 pound bucket, and you're still getting one bucket delivered an hour. So she can do this all by herself by getting rid of the beta blocker. Now she's got a 1 pound bucket, but it's being delivered 5 buckets an hour.
Call me.
So all she's got to do is just stopping the beta blocker is it.
Call me naive or whatever the word is, but how is it possible? I know the answer, but that her doctor, wouldn't understand what you just said.
The standard of care. He has rules he has got to follow, or he's going to lose his license. And that rule says, for Christ's sake, put that 91-year-old lady on a beta blocker. He's like, yes, sir. And her problem is she's not paying the doctor. She's using insurance. She's probably got Medicare. She's 91. So when you use insurance for your health care, you are not in control. You do not call the shots. That doctor does not work for you. You do not count. And if you drop dead, oh, well, your insurance company will deliver 10 more just like you.
So that doctor on their own is not going to say, get off the beta blockers because it's making you... You can't do that.
No. Yeah. Oh. Well, why do you think I'm sitting in Panama, right?
That's right.
You think he wants to join me?
You want to go down to Panama?
He might if he saw the view, but, you know, he's got in his mind, this is the boogeyman, you know, it's like,
Okay, so let me ask you this, Doc. So what if Joyce goes to the doctor and says, okay, I think I want to get off these beta blockers. I've been reading about it. These are not good for me. Can the doctor actually have, without getting in trouble, say, okay, yeah, I'll just get them off?
No. He's going to say, you are 91 years old. You're obviously senile. Let me call the psychiatrist to evaluate you. In fact, we need to lock you up and make sure you take these beta blockers. If he's following the standard of care, that's what he's going to do.
Yeah.
Like when I started in practice, they gave me a list. If your patient does this, you got to call the police. You got to call the psychiatrist. You got to get them locked up. I'm like, what? Yes. Again, my practice, though, I didn't take insurance. Patients paid me directly. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm locked up a paying patient? I don't think so. But these doctors, these patients are not paying these doctors. They have insurance, right? So, of course, a doctor can lock them up. No problem. Yeah, lock them up. Again, the insurance company delivers 10 more patients. What the heck?
Planet Earth. 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. I'm going to order some Vitality capsules, but I don't see them on your store. Is Dr. Daniels have any specials or sales on them? Yeah, she mentioned they are in our store, and it takes you right to her website, but she's going to do the sale this week. And how does that go again now, the sale?
It's going to be Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Okay.
And Vitality Capsules will be deeply discounted, but in order to get your email on Saturday morning saying, hey, the sale is on, you need to go to vitalitycapsules.com. Make sure you're on the mailing list, and you will get that email Saturday morning.
Okay. It's September 25th. If you'd like to ask Dr. Daniels a question, you can do so by sending out an email right now, patrick@oneradionetwork.com, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. So John says, so I understand the idea of statins and we shouldn't lower our cholesterol. So what is Dr. Daniels' number for cholesterol that she likes to see with her patients?
At least 250.
250. Yeah,
wow. At least 250. And if you're over 70, it should be over 300.
Oh, right. When you, as you get older, you get to have more.
You need a higher cholesterol. So if you want to live to be, like this lady's 91 years old,
mm-hmm.
they did a study in Europe. They did a study of people and their cholesterol level versus death rate. And then they also did a study of cholesterol level versus age.
Mm-hmm.
And so the death rate, once your cholesterol goes below 200, the death rate goes up. Very interesting.
Mm.
Also, once your cholesterol gets over 300, now you're into longevity. So now you're into 70, 80, 90-year-olds. Very interesting.
Now, you know what happens, of course, if somebody goes to the doctor today in the United States, if your cholesterol is like 180, they want to put you on statins, you know.
Correct.
Oh, my goodness. So does the liver make the cholesterol? And if you wanted to get to 250 or 3, do you have to eat a lot of cholesterol foods like eggs and meat?
We're into heavy league cholesterol.
Cholesterol.
You don't get to 250, 300 eating eggs, I'm telling you.
You got to pull out the big guns, right?
Yeah, pull out the big guns, man. You got to pull out the liver and the ham hocks.
Mm-hmm.
You got to really go for it.
Liver and the ham hocks, that's great. Yeah, liver is so, there's got to be a good way. Do you eat liver? I guess you said you eat it about once a week, right?
Less than that now.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was vegan, I got so exhausted that I was bedridden.
Hmm.
And it was liver that literally got me up out of bed, on my feet, and back in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to eat liver every day for, I would say, about 5 days.
Hmm.
And then now I eat it about 4 times a year.
Oh, just that much just keeps it going, huh? Wow.
Yeah, because it's fat soluble and it's stored. And this is why when people go on a vegan diet, they don't generally get into trouble for anywhere from a week to a couple of years, because all of these liver-based nutrients are stored away in fats.
In fats, okay. Hmm. Hi there to both of you this morning. Enjoying the show. Can lymphedema be cured? My husband has suffered from lymphedema, L-Y-M-P-H-E-D-M-A. How do you say it, Doc?
Lymphedema.
Lymphedema on both of his legs. Got it from a diabetic ulcer on LASIK. When he stops,
Lasix is a water pill.
When he stops Lasix, his leg swells. There must be a natural remedy to help.
This is very circular. So the Lasix worsens his diabetes, right?
Okay.
Diabetes causes the lymphedema. You get with us. Yeah. Right. So he's on a cycle here. I guess they call it a merry-go-round. So first step he's got to do is cure his diabetes. He's got to stop being diabetic. That is his number one mission. So this lymph being blocked is blocked by, you know, sugar, by toxins, by impurities. So the way to get rid of his lymphedema is, one, cure his diabetes with diet, not with drugs. Two, get off all the diabetic medications, you know, by changing his lifestyle and diet. And then he'll need to do some cleansing. Maybe, you know, liver flushes or juice fast or things like that. But he's got to be committed to making drastic lifestyle changes. There is no magic pill. There's no salve you can rub on, you know, because his problem is his diet and the choices he's making.
Have you worked with people, the type 1 that are taking insulin, and even people that they carry around these little pumps strapped on their side? Have you seen those kind of things? Wow.
Yes.
Is it possible, in your opinion, to get off these and get back straight again?
Yeah. So when I was practicing medicine, I had a type 1 diabetic who was on the pump.
Yeah.
You can imagine, it's pretty rare back then. So I only had one patient on the pump. And at first, my attitude was, well, you know, you're diabetic, you're on the pump, see the specialist for that, I can take care of the other things.
Mm-hmm.
And so finally one day she said, you know, Dr. Dance, I'm not really happy with what's going on with my diabetic specialist, and it just seems to me there's got to be some kind of way to improve the situation. And so the first thing we did was we cut out all of her dairy, every specialist.
All dairy, cut it out.
Right. Mm-hmm. Once we did that, all of a sudden her blood sugars settled down. And then she said, you know what, I want to do more. I think I might be able to get off this pump. And she was actually able to get off the pump. And her route off the pump was a raw food diet. So she went on a raw food diet with, she followed the Hallelujah Acres plan.
Oh, and I've heard of that one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And she was able to get off her pump. And she was down to just, when I last saw her, she was down to 3 units of insulin a day. Not a lot of insulin. Now, in the process, she lost about 40 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And so most people on the pump are a little bit overweight because the pump keeps you fat by giving you basically more insulin than you need. So, yeah, it's possible. It's a lot of hard work. It took her a year and a half to do it, but it takes commitment and determination.
So what's the idea of the pump? Well, people need so much so often that you can't even do it by injection?
No. So the idea of the pump is basically it's a moneymaker. The cost of the pump is about $10,000 a year. So that's a lot of money.
Wow.
So really it's just a moneymaker. They have enough insulins out there that can give you the same steady coverage now that the pump does. So the pump is basically a moneymaker. They have insulins now that last so long, you can give yourself a shot every 2 days. So the concept of the pump is now pretty much obsolete. But the concept of the pump is the person needs so many units of insulin every single hour of the day, maybe 1 or 2 units, and that's the baseline background insulin that they need. So when they eat a meal, their blood sugar will never spike because there's always a little bit of insulin kind of circulating.
I see.
That's the theory.
When a type 1 is on insulin and you start lowering the blood sugar through diet lifestyle, is it a natural progression that the need for insulin just lowers and you can figure out what
Correct.
To do?
I don't know how to figure out what to do, but you got to lower your insulin. Yeah, so most type 1 diabetics have an issue with their beverages. Either they're drinking alcohol or they're drinking syrup or they're drinking fruit juice or they're drinking milk, but they have a beverage issue. So once they clear up their beverage issue, usually their at least their blood sugar is stabilized and their overall need for insulin goes down. Then they can mix in changing their other parts of their diet with exercise, and that's where they get the rest of their gains. Now, to kick it up a notch, they can do cleansing, and they can, of course, change your diet to unprocessed foods and, you know, higher level foods.
So beverage thing, it would be like beer and stuff like that.
Definitely alcohol and dairy. Those are two things that are bad.
Yeah. Is it the alcohol in the beer or the sugar in the beer? Both?
The alcohol is number one because the alcohol impairs the liver, so the liver can't respond and lower the blood sugar like it's supposed to.
Yeah. Hmm. Right. Wow. But there's hope for folks, type 1s and out there that are listening if they really want to get after it. Yeah.
Right.
Here's an email from Kevin for Dr. Jennifer Daniels. By the way, she's on the last Tuesday of the month. She's in Panama, where she's safe and sound. People don't bother. It's September 25, 2018. I finally started some enemas a couple months ago to keep everything kind of moving. So no matter what else I do, especially when I feel toxified, I've not had a bowel movement soon after arising. So no matter what I do, okay. But eventually I've gotten a lot of periodic itchiness down there and minor hemorrhoids fluctuating in size. I presume this is a result of my body realizing it can redirect toxins out the door instead of my experience of scalp, sinuses, throat, and tongue and skin. Your thoughts?
All right, so this is like really confusing.
My
question is, are the other symptoms improved? Did we get that? Did he mention it somewhere in there?
No.
Mm-mm. Oh, okay. So we don't know.
Yeah, I don't
know.
The
answer is we don't know. No. The answer is we don't know.
We don't know because you didn't give us enough information.
Right.
Okay. Let's go to when we get enough information. Is the liver flush in your book, Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful, still the protocol that you recommend? Are there some changes since then?
Yes, I don't recommend that protocol anymore. It takes like takes 7 to 10 days to do a liver flush. So now your protocol is only 18 hours, which is much easier, simpler, quicker, and you get more stones out. So that protocol has changed, and I am working on updating the book.
Tell us a little bit about your new improved one. Give us an idea how that works.
The new improved one combines turpentine with the olive oil. And so what that means then is you have immediately this solvent, the turpentine, being transported into the liver with the olive oil. And that makes the stones dissolve a little bit, just enough to dislodge them. So you get much more stones out. So that's the huge change. And so with that big change, there's not a need to go on a kind of mini juice / water fast diet for a week before the fast, because now you can get that particular stage taken care of pretty much instantaneously on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the huge difference.
So you're doing olive oil and turpentine, then are you mixing the citrus juices with that too? Just
No. So you do the olive oil and turpentine first, then you chase it with the citrus, then you lay down for 20 minutes, and then the next morning you poop out your stones.
Really? Huh. How much olive oil, how much turp?
1/2 cup olive oil and 1 teaspoon turpentine.
How be doing? Just before bedtime?
Well, no, at 10 p.m.
10 p.m., okay. And then you're chasing it with some citrus?
You chase it with the lemon juice.
Oh, with the lemon juice, huh? Wow, and people get stones out that way, huh?
A lot of stones. So I used to do the one in the book, and I would get five or ten stones. And then I did the shorter one, 18 hours, and even more stones came out. But even more importantly, I felt better and improved by the liver flush for a period of weeks.
Wow.
Whereas the liver flush in the book, if you eat poorly after the flush, then your good feeling will only last for like 2 days. Mm-hmm. So you really have to be careful post-flush to protect your good results. Whereas with the newer flush, you feel better, and that good feeling lasts for weeks, which is a major break.
Are you eating an evening meal on that 10 p.m. night?
No.
No. So you're just having lunch and then doing that.
Right, and that's
it. Mm-hmm. Any other preparations you're doing prior to that?
No, nothing. Hmm. So the day before, there's no obligation to change your diet. You could be, day before you could be vegetarian even.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing else. So it's very nice, very convenient, and it's very like user-friendly. You don't have to quit your job to do it.
Yeah, seems pretty simple. A lot of the other liver flushes have been going around for years, always recommending like malic acid and apple juice to soften the stones.
No.
You don't think there's a need for that?
No, because the turpentine does it. It melts the stones just enough to dislodge them.
Mm-hmm.
So they just tumble out.
Because we always have new listeners, just give them the short story on what you're talking about. Just don't go to the Home Depot and get turpentine from the paint thinner department, right?
Well, you have to get 100% pure gum spirits of turpentine. Now, where you get it from is another matter.
Mm-hmm.
And if you read cans very, very carefully, you can find 100% pure gum spirits of turpentine in your hardware store.
Mm-hmm.
But you must get 100% pure gum spirits of turpentine. So I discovered this. When I was looking for something that would reverse disease and return people to their pre-sickness state. And I discovered that this was something that was used in the United States prior to 1900, very widely used.
Yeah.
And I resurrected it, determined what the dose was, what the frequency was, how to take it, and had amazing results in my medical practice, curing diseases that were incurable, whether it was arthritis, lupus, hypertension. And so then after I stopped practicing, I, you know, released the report to the internet where it promptly, the report, an ebook, promptly sold $35,000 in 1 week.
That's crazy.
However, it was the internet. So what that means is it got ripped off and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So now I give it away for free on my website at vitalitycapsules.com. You just go to vitalitycapsules.com, enter your email, and you get the report delivered to your inbox. And a lot of people, you know, will listen to me or watch a few YouTube videos, and they'll try turpentine, and they'll have problems, and they'll send me an email. And I can tell from their email they did not read the report. So read the report. It goes through every single problem you might possibly have with turpentine, how to avoid it. So read that report first before you even attempt turpentine.
And if you go on One Radio Network, if you're interested in this, put in Dr. Jennifer Daniels turpentine in our search engine, and you'll see the one, the original one we did. What year was that? Do you know the one that's got 14
condoms? Oh, my God, we're getting so old, aren't we? It's 2018. It must have been 2016.
Was it 2016 or something?
2015?
Still, it's one of the top ones on the Google page when you do turpentine. It shows up that people just listen to a lot of that, thousands and thousands. So, yeah, that's the thing to do. And then you know, when you get the Candida cleanser, that gives you the whole thing to read carefully, right?
Yes, and you have case studies of people that I used turpentine with, the miraculous results that they got, people who did not follow instructions, and the problems they got, and how we fix those problems. So it's really important to read the report to have that perspective. People will tell me, well, I went to the hardware store, and my turpentine said 70% turpentine, 30% blah, blah, blah. I said, well, you didn't read the report, did you? Go read the report.
I didn't read that.
So you have to read the report. If you're illiterate, don't worry. Have someone else read it to you.
Mm-hmm. When you do that half cup olive oil and a teaspoon, 10 o'clock. I guess you don't have any issues with going to the bathroom in the morning.
Well, you have to take Epsom salts.
Oh, so you left that off.
Yeah, so that would be 6 p.m., 8 p.m., 6 a.m., and 8 a.m. You're taking Epsom salts. So this gives you quite the push.
Oh, 6 and 8 when?
P.m. and a.m.
Oh, 6 and 8 p.m. Oh, before you take the oil. And then in the morning as well.
Correct.
And how much Epsom are you taking?
A tablespoon, so it's a pretty hefty dish.
Pretty. Whoa. So if you're doing one tablespoon at 6 o'clock and 8 o'clock, things are pretty well cleared out by the time you do the oil.
Well, at least they're moving along.
They're moving along. My experience with Epsom salts, they're definitely moving along. But do you really need them in the morning, or is the olive oil is not going to push all that out?
No, you really do need at least one of the morning doses.
Okay.
I'd recommend taking Mm-hmm. Taking both, even if you don't think you need them, I'd recommend taking mm-hmm. them.
Mm-hmm. So what's going on differently in the classic olive oil, citrus, you know, the classic liver flush, when you're adding the turpentine? What's going on differently, Dr. Daniels?
Again, you're spending a whole week of preparation trying to loosen and dislodge those stones. That's what the whole week of preparation is about.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you add the turpentine in, you don't need that week of preparation, because the turpentine goes in as a solvent, carried in by the olive oil, and dislodges those stones for you.
Mm-hmm. Do most of us have stones, you think?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Does it block the bile from coming out nicely?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Any danger of too large stones that get stuck in there and you go, ow, yeah.
No, because you got two things going on. You got the solvent effect of the turpentine,
mm-hmm.
and then you got the lubricating effect of the olive oil. So the two together, you're good to go.
Good to go. Mm, cool. All right, Dr. Jennifer Daniels, Patrick Timpone. It is oneradionetwork.com. If you care to be on the show, you can email a question, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Computer right here in front of me, and we'll get you on the air and do it. It is the 25th of September. It's a pleasure to be here with you every morning. Andrew Goss will be here tomorrow, and then that's the Real World of Money, and then Richard Massey and Meridian Grace here on Thursday. If you've not tried our Pearlseum product, I think you're going to really like this. You'll see it right at the top page. It's a powder that's made out of real pearls that Dr. Rulin Chu, who's a PhD quantum physicist lady, she got lots of letters behind her name and pretty smart cookie, and she figured out how to bust up these pearls, real pearls, not mother of pearl or some fake pearl, real pearls, into a powder that's got a beautiful little matrix and got that whole crystalline thing working. And you can do the research into Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine, thousands of years, and pearls has been traditionally used for health and beauty for thousands of years. And back in the Cleopatra days, it is said, you know, it's written in all the old text and that she used to use it on her face. Actually, she used to also do olive oil baths, Cleopatra, so she had a thing going on, too. And then she used pearl and other things on her face as well. Oh, Cleo, that's what they say. You know, they, Doug and Mel, tell you those things. But you can use this pearl in your favorite face cream. Like I like to use the one we get with our aloe people, and you kind of mix it up in a little container and you smear that on your face, and it's really, really nice for your face. And then the real thing is on your teeth. And if you trust me on this one, just try it. I think you're going to be so amazed at how beautiful, kind of shiny and pearly your teeth look with this Pearlseum. It's the best thing I've ever played around with my teeth. So I like to use the closest, that chlorine dioxide. I like to use that as a mouthwash and then do the Pearlseum, and good to go. It also helps heal gums. It's got not only calcium, but magnesium and a lot of minerals and proteins as well. And it's a very nice fine powder. And the way to do it is to get two containers, because you really get a nice discount. And so when you click on it, it's going to take you right to the two container. I think we've changed the one on the top page as well to the two container one. Let me check. If not, I'll ask Sharon to do that. Yeah, we do. Got to the two containers. So it's a pretty cool thing. And that's the way to do it. I just did that. I have one in my bathroom now and one in my kitchen. And you can take this internally too. Very, very nice way to get some minerals in your body along with the other minerals that we have from living streams. Check it out. Pearlseum, right on the front page. Internally, brush your teeth and on your face, on oneradionetwork.com. I don't believe I've heard such a concise, clear explanation of what EMFs could possibly do to the body than recently with Dr. Lee Cowden.
Now, electromagnetic fields are multiply problematic because the electromagnetic fields will disrupt the membrane barriers. So it disrupts the gut barrier and allows more toxins to get from the gut into the bloodstream. It disrupts the blood vessel barrier, so you get more toxins from the bloodstream out into the tissues. It disrupts the blood-brain barrier, which allows more toxins from the bloodstream to get into the brain. And the electromagnetic fields are screwing up the electrical charge across the cell membrane. The health of a cell is determined primarily by the electrical charge across the cell membrane. But when you expose a cell to electromagnetic field, that charge across the cell membrane diminishes over time. And so the cell becomes sicker and sicker and sicker. Now, in addition, research from Europe shows that whenever you expose microbes to electromagnetic fields, they grow faster and produce more biotoxins. So we know that funguses, for example, will produce as much as 600 times more biotoxin or mycotoxin if they are outside of a Faraday cage compared to being inside of a Faraday cage in the same environment.
So as you know, the only way to absolutely be protected from all EMFs is live in a Faraday cage, but that's probably not very practicable. We have the Blue Shield technology through Brandon Amalani. We think this is a very, very effective way to build your body's immunity with the cells. Look at the technology. Talk to Brandon. Email him. Look at it closely. Research it and see what you think. Blue Shield, right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. Previously, when we were talking with Adam Bergstrom,
I had abscess here a few nights ago. And Vibrant Gal said, take some aloe. And I said, for this? I mean, my eye is hurting and I can't smile. So I took the aloe. I woke up in the morning completely gone. That's not supposed to happen unless you have antibiotics. And antibiotics don't even work that quickly. So I'm a big fan of aloe. Guess what? The medical doctors are trying to say it's carcinogenic. But that's because they have a competing drug and they don't want people to just grow an aloe plant, for heaven's sake. They want them to take the expensive drug. And that's when all that cancer nonsense came out.
You know, I keep talking about the aloe that we were promoting, that I love this product that comes in fresh. I keep talking about it, the benefits for the small intestine, large intestine, the gut and everything. But it must have some really good immune properties if it worked on your tooth.
It does. And remember, we're taught that the focal infection affects the whole body from the mouth, but it's actually the colon first and then the mouth, and then it distributes.
The Stockton Aloe 1 on the front page of One Radio Network. You can get yourself a couple half gallons of fresh, frozen, nothing else aloe. And boy, this is the way to go. I mean, it takes many, many aloe plants to get enough aloe for just one bottle. Check it out right on the front page, Stockton Aloe, front page under the slideshow, OneRadioNetwork.com.
From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Okay, here we are, hour two. It's September 25, 2018. Dr. Jennifer Daniels, VitalityCapsules.com. Dr. Daniels also does what she calls discovery sessions. Doc, tell the folks about those and what kind of service you offer there.
Okay, so Discovery Session is an opportunity for you to discover what's really going on and for you to kind of rethink how you're looking at your illness, as well as getting a plan going forward to really solve the problem. So I do have a 16-week program, and the Discovery Session is a way to find out about that as well, but I'm cutting back on that, and so now the Discovery Sessions are more, hopefully I take a look at it and see if I can just solve it right there for you in that half hour. And even though the Discovery Sessions are they're about $300 to $400, depending on the promotion at the time. But for many people, they've already spent thousands of dollars in many years with their affliction, and so it's quite a deal for them to be able to sort things out and move forward in that space of time.
Yeah. Sort things out. Boy, really getting to the cause, that's the deal, isn't it?
Yeah.
What does Dr. Jennifer Daniels, thanks for the show, what does she think about all this medical marijuana and high CBD stuff that's out there? Does she think it's good stuff to try?
All right. As they say, wait for it. So I was Googling something, and I don't know why they threw some marijuana stuff in my Google search, but the price of marijuana has fallen to $30 an ounce in the state of Washington.
Oh, you mean just for on-the-street recreational stuff?
No, go to the dispensary, $30 an ounce.
Oh.
And that's actually less than the black market rate. And those of you who aren't into marijuana prices, the usual price is $250 to $700 an ounce. So there's been a price crash in marijuana. All right. So what's the relevance of that? The true therapeutic value of marijuana is in the real deal. In other words, the stuff with the THC. Forget the CBD. Get the THC, which has the CBD included, and smoke it if you want therapeutic benefit. That's what really works. the CBD thing is it devitalizes marijuana. It makes it weaker, and it panders to people's fears about marijuana and panders to the arbitrary cultural requirement that marijuana is illegal. So CBD is simply a way to skirt the illegality of marijuana. But if you want therapeutic benefit from marijuana, you need to get the real stuff with THC, smoke it, and see if it works for you.
Mm-hmm. Is that so? Most of the juice is coming from the THC and not the CBD.
Well, you know, that's like saying most of my juice comes from my baby finger, not my index finger. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So the juice comes from the whole thing. It's like unprocessed food. You know, you can say, well, you know, you shouldn't eat white flour because real juice comes from the bran part. No, it's one whole package. And so the marijuana plant is a whole package.
Mm-hmm.
They've tried separating out this, separating out that, putting it in a pill, and all it does is cause hallucinations and just dreadful side effects. So we're back to the same old thing. You need to get the whole thing. You need to get it in an unprocessed form. And then try it. It might be helpful for you. Having said that, people I've met who've had marijuana-related situations that were, let's say, cured or fixed by marijuana, you know, could have got to the same place with cleansing and dumping their toxins. And so marijuana is very helpful to, as a palliative, to diminish the effects of the toxins / parasites in your system. And because marijuana is so safe, it's a reasonable holding pattern to maintain indefinitely. You can decide, okay, well, I'll just smoke 3 puffs a day the rest of my life and no more problem with my insomnia.
Kate writes in, I've been wanting to grow my hair. Well, good for you. What dosage do you recommend? Growing your hair is good. Well, what dosage do you recommend for the nutritional yeast blackstrap molasses? Also, just an FYI, I recently ordered the Plantation unsulfured blackstrap molasses, non-organic, and it said 60 calories per tablespoon on the label, but some of the bottles at my local store with an earlier expiration date still have 42 calories on the label. So now I'm concerned that they have recently changed the formula.
Correct. So you've got to get the 42 calorie bottle. The formula is always changed. That's why you have to read the bottle.
So why do we want the 42 calorie bottle?
Because the ratio of sugar to minerals and B vitamins is low enough that the molasses has a healing effect.
Ah.
So if it's more than 50 calories per tablespoon, the ratio of sugar is too high and the molasses will not heal you.
I'll be done. So just look at the bottle. So does it matter, sulfured, organic?
Unsulfured, and I don't recommend organic because I've never seen organic that has less than 50 calories per tablespoon.
Okay.
In fact, they have organic with 80 calories a tablespoon. I'm like, what are you trying to do, get diabetes? Jesus Christ.
So are you mixing up molasses with yeast?
So what I would do is I would do molasses, and you could do nutritional yeast. It's pretty disgusting. The nutritional yeast amount is about a tablespoon of nutritional yeast and 2 tablespoons of molasses. You can take that any way you want to, not necessarily together, because it really does taste bad. The other option, though, is you can use kelp, K-E-L-P, kelp powder.
Mm-hmm.
So kelp powder, about a teaspoon a day, which is a pretty high dose of kelp powder, and 2 tablespoons of molasses also grows hair. So those are 2 ways to go.
Wow. Do we know why that works, the molasses?
I think that the molasses works because it reverses the effects of white sugar and white flour, which can clog your hair follicles.
Ah, interesting.
So literally, blackstrap molasses, when you are under 50 calories a tablespoon, is the antidote to white sugar and white flour.
Oh, under 50 calories. So because that's important. Look on the, and that's 50.
Less than 50.
50 calories per, is it per tablespoon they usually make the measurement?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Pretty good stuff there, man. I like that. Since blackstrap molasses is a significantly processed product, are there no negative effects with the high heat and caramelization of the sugars as it's concentrated down? This is from Bob. up in molasses country down in Maine. Oh, so he's saying it's not an issue when they have to cook it all down like that.
Or maybe he's saying he thinks there might be an issue.
Yeah, he may be. Yeah, I think he's asking, is there an issue? Yeah.
Right. Okay. So you have to understand how molasses is made. So you have this thing called sugarcane plant, and you squeeze juice out of it. We'll call it sugarcane juice. That juice is boiled. And when that juice is boiled, they filter it to take out all the impurities so that the white sugar is super, super white. And what is left over when the white sugar is drawn off is this pile of nutrients called blackstrap molasses. Now, they can choose to draw off more sugar or less sugar. They can even choose to add back some white sugar. And that's where you get the calorie content of the molasses itself. And so depending on who the molasses is being sold to, then the person buying it will say, well, I want it to be 60 calories per tablespoon. And then the plant will calibrate it to the calories requested by the person who's selling the molasses.
Mm-hmm.
So you, the customer, have no control over this at all.
And people have figured out that one that gets over 50, then it screws up the ratio and yields it not.
People have figured it out. I have figured it out.
Oh, you figured
so
it out.
So I was in medical practice. Yeah, no, I don't work on hearsay. So that's not how I figured. That's not where I got this number from.
It's hearsay, Your Honor, your hearsay.
No, I don't work on hearsay. So I'm sitting in my medical office. I'm reading all these natural healing books. And, wow, molasses, all these wonderful things molasses does. It clears your skin. It grows hair. It does all these wonderful, wonderful, amazing things. So I started recommending blackstrap molasses to people.
Right.
And so some people came back and said, well, doc, I don't really think that worked. And this one patient came back and said, oh, my God, Dr. Daniels, that molasses worked. You're a freaking genius. Look at my hair. It's growing. Oh, it's amazing. I was like, oh, wait a minute. Where did you buy your molasses from? I have to go get that. Because I was getting some pretty mediocre response, and I was getting ready to kind of abandon this recommendation. So she told me this health food store is where she got it from. So I immediately went over to the health food store, and sure enough, their molasses was 38 calories per tablespoon.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went and looked at my molasses at home, and sure enough, it was 60 calories per tablespoon. And then I looked at all the other molasses on the counter, and they were like 80 calories a tablespoon for the organic. And so I realized it was that calorie content being so low with so little sugar and so much of the minerals, B vitamins, and other nutrients.
Hmm.
I mean, it has chromium, vanadium, all kind. Every trace mineral they're trying to sell you to cure your diabetes is right there in the molasses.
I'll be done.
So that's how I realized that it was the calorie content that was creating the healing. That the molasses had sugar in it, but it had an excess of nutrients more than enough to digest the sugar, in this case of 38 calories, and leftover nutrients your body could use for healing for whatever it wanted. Once that calorie count gets over 50, gets to 50 or more, then there aren't enough nutrients left over after the nutrients are used to digest and metabolize, the sugar component of the molasses.
Very interesting.
So I hope that helps answer the question.
Yeah, that's great. If we have another break before the show, I'm going to run down and get the one I have. I'm real curious now to see how many calories are in there.
Yes.
It's the most famous one they have at the hippie food store. And, you know what I mean? So watch this one. We'll see how many calories are in there. It's funny. Okay.